Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Coming up on this episode of the Mario Rosenstock podcast.
Are you ready to hand over to him?
Okay.
Let's do it.
20 minutes to 1 o'clock now, and time to hand over to Joe and see what's happening on today's live line. Joe.
Well, good afternoon to you, Ronan. Absolutely delighted to be talking to you on this day. Matt Cooper's on the line. Matt Cooper.
Hello, Matt. We've only ever met once before.
Hi. I
never met Matt Cooper once.
And how dare you call me a fucking DJ? I heard you. You called me a DJ. You're a little bollocks.
Well, Matt Cooper was not happy with my special guest this week, and he wasn't the only one to phone into the Joe Duffy Show to speak to the great Ronan Collins. We also heard from Louis Walsh, Miriam O'Callaghan, and would you believe even the great Gay Byrne? How that happens is just, it's impossible to figure out. Someone that Ronan worked with for decades in RTE and for whom he had so much respect himself. But Ronan himself is also one of Ireland's, it's fair to say, most loved, respected broadcasters. He spent over 43 years in front of the mic and has the distinction of presenting Ireland's longest running and most listened to music radio show, a role that he has only recently retired from. In the chat, you're about to hear Ronan and I talk about music radio and how it has changed, why he's not a fan, and the great radio presenters and producers, Ryan Tuberty's future, and lots, lots more.
I don't think it's funny. I don't think it's a radio, and it certainly isn't music radio, just because they stick in a song by Lizzo or Cardi B or Ask Me Arse or whoever it is, you know. There's a lot of great music around as well, but there's an awful lot of junk. There's more people have wanted me off that slot than have wanted me on it. Sometimes it was uncomfortable being the sore thumb.
Yeah.
That stuck
out. That's what I'm asking you, really.
Yeah. Sometimes it was a little uncomfortable, but once I went into the studio and closed the door, that was my room. That here we are in April 2023. Isn't it extraordinary how many people dyed their hair grey during the pandemic? In all my years in RTE, it was suggested I might play this, that and the other. But I decided what was played. All along, right through my career, whether they liked it or not, they were giving me the gift of authority.
Yes. My full chat with Ronan Collins coming up right after we check in with the Mario Rosenstock voicemail hotline. Ronan's a popular guy, so it was a busy one this week. Let's take a listen to a selection of some of the messages coming in.
Hi, you've reached the Mario Rosenstock podcast. Please leave a message.
Yeah, Mario. Luke O'Neill here, Professor Luke O'Neill, looking forward to the Ronan Collins podcast. Ronan, of course, if he's listening, Ronan, if you're listening, I love music. As you know, you love music. However, the data here is telling me that you've never actually played one of my tracks on your show, not even as your lockdown loosener upper when it was extant, which was disappointing given my epic contribution to the fight against COVID. Anyway, maybe you'll change your tack at some stage on Radio Gold. Thanks, Ronan. Good luck. How are you, Ronan? Ray Darcy here. Well done, well done, well done. You're looking great. You're looking great. You haven't aged in the last 20 years. Now, I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but I'm guessing that it's all down to that little chat we had in the canteen 20 years ago to the day. You had your hand on the chocolate muffin, and I pointed gently over to the porridge, and you walked over and you got a bowl, and that was the beginning. And now I hear you're on the hake every day, and the porridge and the running. Well done to you. Not blowing my own trumpet, but it was all me. Joke.
Hi, Mario. Patrick Harrington here. Looking forward to the podcast. Message for Ronan Collins. Ronan, could you stop ringing me, texting me, messaging me, and sending me videos of your bleeding golf swing, please? I have no further tips to offer. We met once in Paris Court, okay? Just stop stalking me, or I'm going to put out an order against you, okay? I'm calling the cops, okay? Just fuck off.
Exclusive comedy every week on the Mario Rosenstock podcast. And if you want to see me live, by the way, my brand new show, Gift Grub Live 23, is on tour all over Ireland at the moment. And I arrive in the Olympia Theatre next week, the 13th, 14th and 15th of April. In the Olympia, Thursday, Friday and Saturday. I think Friday and Saturday are just about sold out. Thursday, there's still some tickets left. And thereafter, in various different destinations around the country, particularly in June, I'm doing two nights on Friday and Saturday, June 23rd and 24th in the Cork Opera House and all over the country. See Ticketmaster for details. So let's meet my special guest for this week, Ronan Collins. We were doing a little bit of a setup with the headphones and all that before we got started. So we may as well just join it in there. Better, potentially lots we could talk about now.
Whatever you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ronan, you can hear yourself there?
I can hear myself, yeah. Not very loudly hearing myself. I'm hearing
be as giving as you can now, Ronan.
Okay, that's lovely now, yeah.
Do you like that?
Mario, yeah.
That's perfect. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
That is nice. I always wear headphones. Eno wears his headphones like this.
Yeah.
One on, one off.
That's right. That's from the old days when you listened to the speaker and you were pre-fading the vinyl 45.
Is that it? Is it?
Yeah.
All right.
You'd have the vinyl 45. The speaker would be playing in the studio.
Are we recording that bit? Yeah, because I love this.
The speaker would be playing.
Why a presenter would wear one ear, one off on the headphones?
Yeah, well, he'd listen. He'd have the program on both headphones, but then when he wanted to pre-fade his gramophone beside him with the vinyl 45 on it, the mic would be off, so the speakers would be on.
Yeah.
So he takes off the right or the left, and he has the pre-fade in the left ear, and he gets the start of the single, and pulls it back, plus an inch, and then you lock it, and then you open the fader in for it.
Well, that's exactly. So I always wondered why Eno was wearing.
Well, watch him when he talks; he'll do that.
He does. Yeah. Exactly, he does.
So that's it. It's the old habit from the days of.
He does exactly
45.
Do that, you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I was, I started on radio in RTE in 79.
Mm.
So we had what they laughingly called a comp-op studio, which was two record players, gramophones they like to call them, because that's what the BBC called them.
Yeah.
And there were massive big things called EMTs. They were fantastic, with beautiful heavy arm on them and a Shure cartridge. Really top quality stuff. You could stand on them, you know. Mm. But if the brake went on them, they'd slip. You know, so you had to be good at holding them on the slip mat, you know, holding the single. But it was great. It was great discipline. And it's the way we did it in the Pirates. So when we went to RTE then, it was kind of posh. Then,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Just following on from the thing in the ears there. I think you were quoted as saying, I don't know, it's not your quote really, because other people have said it before, but DJs don't die, they just fade away.
Yeah.
Explain that concept.
Well, I think DJs, you know, I kind of denied the DJ thing for a long time.
Yeah? Yeah. Is it broadcaster or presenter?
I think I was a presenter.
Right.
You know?
Because Ian always calls himself a DJ.
Well, he's right.
Mm.
Because ultimately that's what we are. I think Gay Byrne was sorry he wasn't a DJ more than he was a radio personality, because he loved disc and patter, as they used to call it. He absolutely loved it. I remember he did a program called the Prescott's New Releases Show.
Yeah.
And in 15 minutes, they would play seven new releases.
Yeah.
And Gay used to jock the program.
Yeah.
And he loved it. And I think ultimately, you know, when it all got very serious, I remember somebody calling Matt Cooper a DJ once.
Yeah.
And maybe he's not. I'm sure Matt's very serious and everything. But I'm a DJ now. A 70-year-old DJ. And we don't fade away. We were told to go away eventually.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing. Because I remember Ian said, I think to me years ago, we were having a few pints and, you know, I was sort of, I don't know how it got into this thing about what would you do after this? And I think he sort of intimated to me he'd go here, X place, that Y place, Z place, and the other place until he just has nowhere else to go, until he, basically he's good doing it from his bedroom. But there was no sense that when he, let's say, gave up Today FM that he was going to give up. Now, I don't know if that still pertains.
Oh, I think so. I think that's absolutely true, that you don't give up. Like when I announced to RTE last June that I was finishing on the lunchtime programme, that I was finishing 5 day a week broadcasting after 43 and a half years, 43 and a half very quick years, I might add. Mm. There was never a sense from me that I was stopping.
Mm.
I was always going to do something. And I gave RTE the options. I said, you know, I can go at the end of the year and I can go elsewhere, or I can stay with you and do things. And they said, well, we'll talk about it. And then word got out that I was finishing, and only two other people asked outside of RTE, and both of them knew the answer already, because I wouldn't have done what they were doing. I wouldn't have wanted to do it, which was working in what I called limited format music radio. But like music radio has been killed for years, but it's on the way back through things like Classic Hits FM and RTE Gold, I think, which is a much broader gold stroke oldie station than anybody else is offering, you know.
And when you say music radio has been killed, do you mean it's been so tightly formatted?
No, everybody talks. It's full of comedians or people who think they're comedians and telling you how funny they are, with sidekicks who are supposed to be making them laugh and everything.
Mm.
It's also an age thing, you know. I don't think it's funny.
Mm.
I don't think it's radio. Mm. And it certainly isn't music radio. Mm. Just because they stick in a song by Lizzo or Cardi B or Ask Me Arse or whoever it is, you know. And that sounds dismissive of a lot of music. There's a lot of great music around as well. But there's an awful lot of junk played on music stations.
It's interesting because actually just a few days ago I did an interview with Stuart Clark from Hot Press, and it was interesting to hear his take on music. Mm. And
but sure, he's as old as I am.
Exactly. Mm. But Stuart was very, very positive about music.
Oh, I'm positive about music. I absolutely am, and I've always been positive about music. I'm not positive about what we're given in radio.
Yes.
As music radio, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't get a lot of it. You know, look how funny I am. And last night I slipped on a bar of soap.
Yeah.
Not hilarious.
Yeah.
Altogether.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't hilarious. I hope you're all right. But, you know, it wasn't hilarious. It's trying to make funny things out of nothing. You know, there are very funny things on the radio. You're funny on the radio. You've always been funny on the radio with the characters that you've adapted, and some of which you've created, because a lot of understanding is a lot of what you do is exaggerations of people, you know, and that's clever, and that takes talent, and it takes, I mean, I could, you know, I'm a mimic, I could do people, but I don't have a funny script for it, you know, and there are others who think that it's enough. It's enough just to have a subject and let's make it funny.
Mm.
And it isn't funny. Or it's enough to do a voice.
Mm.
Like I can do my milkman.
Mm. Mm.
But he's not funny.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
And nobody knows what my milkman sounds like except me.
Yeah. This brings me to another area which is kind of coming back to me now with you. And it pretty much circles around every time I meet you. And that is that... Have you always been like this, a kind of a take no bullshit merchant? How long have you been like that, or have you always like that?
No, I think I've been a cranky old horse some of the time. I'm not sure if it's whether it's wanting to do it my own way or believing that my way, which is very ordinary, is kind of the right way. Or I've never looked on myself as being cutting edge broadcaster. Are hugely innovative. I think my biggest talent on air was being myself and having a lot of mileage behind me doing different things in public.
Mm.
And I think out of that, I've kind of ploughed my own furrow and said, well, this is what I do, you know. I'm 43 and a half years on daily radio, and I think after 10 years, I kind of found this is what I do, and I don't want somebody telling me how to do it.
Yeah, because you always have had a healthy, I suppose, skepticism, I think, for what Gabo might have called, you know...
You're turning into him now.
Them upstairs. Mm. That's what I'm saying to you, Ronan.
Yeah.
Them upstairs who, they have you by the short and curlies, don't you know? And they know it. They know it. But your job is to make them think they don't know it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean... Gay and I used to agree on that. Gay and I and others used to agree that those upstairs didn't really know a lot. But, you know, it's all very well. You can be a very good administrator. You can be a very good organizer. Mm. But it doesn't mean you know what listeners want or how best for a broadcaster, be they a DJ or a broadcast journalist, whatever it is, how... They don't necessarily know how best to get the best out of those people, you know?
No. During COVID, right, you became sort of, I think your role in Irish life was more highlighted than ever before.
Yeah.
Because, and I would just speak for myself even in that situation. The guys came out, the engineers came out from Today FM. They put a studio in my house. I was able to broadcast from my house, but then I became housebound and I did what everybody else did. I developed the little routines we did, the little 2 kilometres and the 5 kilometre walks and everything. And I was, you know, at the beginning, the usual story, I felt quite happy and everything. And then I began to feel cooped up and everything. But it's at this time, then I would finish work at around sort of 12 to try and go downstairs and have something to eat. And then you'd be on, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that you became... like that for a lot of people. Now well, and then you had this lunchtime loosener upper.
That was an accident.
No, it was lunchtime. My wife hated it. I would go, oh, come on. It's about 12:40 now. He's going to do the lunchtime loosener upper. She got the fucking lunchtime loosener
All I
upper.
Wanted to do was play reggae and ska records and backbeat records. That's all I wanted to play. But I had to broaden it. It was Radio 1, you know.
Yeah.
But I would have played The Selector all day and Madness all day.
Yeah.
All those frenetic, jumpy up and down things.
This what you did was peculiar. I mean, let's face it. It's RTE. I'm not trying to have a go at it at all now. I'm just seeing it exactly for what it is. But RTE Radio 1 is set up as a kind of an unusual beast, really. You have like this 2-hour Leviathan in the morning, Morning Ireland, attracting 450,000 listeners. And people generally go to it or used to go to it or sometimes go to it more often than others, you know, in times of need when they want to know what's going on. So in other words, when things are bad, people fly to Morning Ireland, you know.
Brendan Balfe used to say years ago, he used to say, look, it's all very well doing this, that and the other, but the actual fact of the matter is that when people want to know if the bus strike is over, they listen to Radio 1.
Correct, because that's the paper of record.
Yeah.
And then Tuberty comes on for 42 minutes or 36 minutes or whatever it is, diminishing every time. And then he's sandwiched nicely in between Claire Byrne or Pat Kenny or Sean O'Rourke or whoever it is. And they do 2 hours of current affairs. And then after you is good afternoon to you, Ronan. My husband's wife, heads fell off. Halal butchers all over the place, Joe. And that's fine. And then there's more. How are you, Ray Darcy, and all this sort of stuff. Your house fell and went on fire as well.
Okay.
And then in between all this, it's this 1 hour of music. Completely bizarre.
I think there's more people have wanted me off that slot than have wanted me on it.
Mm.
But the ones who agreed to leave it there were the ones with the authority.
Well, it was a fucking break, Ronan. It's oppressive. It's oppressive listening to people's opinions all the time.
Well,
Matthew, you think about the bus strike, John. John, no, sorry, I didn't interrupt you. Please don't cut across me. Mm. Okay, well, now it's a pro-bus strike, anti-bus strike. And then the news. The bus strike is on again. And news, and then opinions, and then people calling in about the bus strike.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Just give us. They do the huck-a-buck. They do the huck-a-buck.
Sometimes it was uncomfortable being the sore thumb.
Yeah.
That's
what I'm asking you, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it was a little uncomfortable. But once I went into the studio and closed the door, that was my room.
Yeah.
And I mentioned to you about, you know, that I wasn't going to work on a station that was going to tell me what to play. In all my years in RTE, it was suggested I might play this, that, and the other. But I decided what was played all along, right through my career. And that was a great gift because it gave me the gift of, whether they liked it or not, they were giving me the gift of authority.
Yes.
To decide what's on the program.
And people knew it was you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was me in conjunction with the listeners
asking
for things. And I think experience gained through the years of knowing what people would actually like. Because people would ask for things. I'd say, doesn't really fit, but you get an idea of where they're going. So you play something else for them.
Yeah.
You know? By and large, you play what they ask for. Mm. But it, the whole thing was an adventure. Mm. And I'm sorry I didn't look on it as an adventure when I was doing it and before I did it.
Yeah.
As I do now, because I mean, I've done so much navel gazing and a lot of people have done a lot of looking back over the last 3 months since I stopped doing it. And I'm asked the question, do I miss it? I don't, because I'm still going into RTE and recording, DJing on RTE Gold.
Yeah.
And that's a joy. It's just the best one.
Yeah.
I sometimes imagine I might be Larry Gogan. You know?
Well, just he's the name written down in front of me. I mean, a couple of times I heard you becoming very emotional on the radio. And, you know, you can tell, anybody with any decent sense can tell the difference between fabricated emotion and real emotion. And it's very rare now that you'd hear somebody getting as, oh, I suppose, like almost awkwardly emotional, which is nice. As you did about Larry. And
I'm so pleased that that I travelled along the same direction as Larry. Never on his path, and sometimes lucky enough to be on a parallel path. And he was my friend, first and foremost. I mean, we were friends outside of RTE.
Every day you would clock in with together, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd find him or he'd find me, and we'd mightn't say an awful lot, but we saw each other, and particularly in Larry's later years. When Flory died, his wife, she was a tremendous part of his life, apart from being his wife and the mother to his children. She was a huge part of his thought and his psyche all the time. She guided him, you know. Lorcan, don't be doing that. Lorcan, you shouldn't do that kind of thing, you know. And he listened to her, and she was so right about things. Because Larry would do anything for anybody, you know.
And he was a very kind man.
Oh, unbelievably. Mm. A kind and... In so many ways. And I knew him before I was an RTE, when I was a musician. And I enjoyed his company, and I like to think he enjoyed my company and my then girlfriend, now my wife of nearly 45 years. And she got on so well with him, and he was a very special individual. And then in terms of RTE, like Larry Gogan in 1962 was not an awful lot different from Larry Gogan in 2012, you know. He was a broadcaster who could say anything that needed to be said in the realm in which he was working in less than 30 seconds. Hmm. And he had an inbuilt clock to do that. But he also had an innate ability to be hugely warm and friendly with people he liked. And he also had an inbuilt bullshit deflector.
Detector or deflector?
Deflector.
Deflector.
Mm. He could deflect bullshit. Very easy.
Yeah.
You know, a little like, you know, Brendan O'Carroll's one of the, well, that's nice.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Right.
That Larry would have a remark. That
oh, I know what you mean. Yeah. I remember him saying things like that. Yeah.
And somebody would go and say, that's grand. Yeah, without realising that in actual fact, Larry didn't agree with you and he didn't want it.
Yeah, I know what you say. It's that tone when somebody goes, yeah, that's lovely. Yeah.
That's lovely. And I think that's a sign of the man he was. Mm. He was a warm, affectionate, lovely man. Mm. Hugely knowledgeable about pop music and never afraid to acknowledge where he got his style from, which was Alan Freeman on BBC Radio, even long, long before your time. Mm. Alan Freeman was the DJ, Fluff he was called. Mm. And he was a great friend of Larry's. Larry would have met him many times and they were great friends. And Larry took on his DJ sensibilities, yeah. You know.
What about Tony Fenton? Yeah. Were you friendly with Tony at all?
I wasn't hugely friendly with him, but you couldn't not be aware of the Fentone. Amazing. You know, I remember making a remark one night. Funny, you mentioned Larry, there was a big awards thing in City West, and I was the unlikely compere because I wasn't the DJ or anything. But the reason I was chosen was that they knew I could handle a live stage thing. If anything went wrong, whatever the problem, that I could do that. And that's why I was employed to do it. And I remember they were doing a tribute to somebody. And in the video, the remark was made that it was actually the first record that Tony Fenton bought. And the rest of the thing was said. And I came on afterwards and I said, that statement is so wrong. Tony Fenton never bought a record in his life because he didn't. He was the DJ who got the records.
He did.
From everybody. And he was great. He was, there wasn't a lot of DJ types that were allowed DJs in RTÉ and 2FM. Yeah. Now, you know, Ian is the obvious example.
Yeah.
Tony Fenton, Barry Lang,
with
another terrific guy. I was with Barry the week before last in Dubai.
Yeah.
He's a pilot.
I know he
Emirates,
is. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And we, of course, we were talking about nothing but radio, and they were the DJ guys. And then there was lots of guys who thought they were DJs, lots of them, most of them producers.
What's the difference between what's the difference between a guy who's a DJ and a guy who thinks he's a DJ?
timing.
Yeah.
I just...
Is it a personality thing or a voice thing or is it just...
Most ones who think they're good DJs are producers.
Yeah.
Do you get where I'm coming from?
Oh, I know several. I see, we're trying not to mention any names here at all today. And I'm doing you a favour by not mentioning any names.
Well, certainly in my years, and I came across dozens of them, if not scores of them, radio producers... who were all on their way to being something else.
Yeah.
But they had no idea what it was.
Well, that's interesting that you raised that. That's interesting that you raised that because this is something we've talked about over the years and people who are listening may be interested in broadcasting or stuff. This is an interesting point. A lot of producers nowadays see producing as a stepping stone to being a star. And doesn't even being a star on the radio. They could be a radio producer. They actually want to be a star on Instagram. It's a funny old game.
Well, again...
But really, the art of radio or television production is amazing and should be... A pursuit in its own right.
Absolutely. I mean, I knew some of the best radio producers ever in radio anywhere in Ireland. And they include, they were all in RTÉ because that's where I was.
Yeah, Bill O'Donovan was
Bill O'Donovan,
one of them.
A guy called Tim Lahan, who used always looked like he should have been in a show band. But Tim had an innate sense of what worked and how to put things together and how to guide a presenter.
Mm.
And assist them.
You see, this was a different era, wasn't it? When a producer really had much, much more clout than they do in many respects now.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's all, a lot of it is about pandering to the ego of the presenter or presenters. And the producers are often treated as merely lackeys or assistants, or to use the other term, broadcasting assistants.
Mm.
But actually, they're supposed to be producers, and producers are meant to have the intellectual heft, the power, to shape stuff.
Yeah.
And this guy, Bill O'Donovan, who you talk about, of course, he, you know, I don't know if you could even conjure in your mind a couple of stories about him, but he was a kind of a legendary sort of figure.
Well, he was my mentor.
Mm.
He was Larry Gogan's guiding light in the 60s. Mm. He was the one who battled for Larry through many years because, you know, Larry and what he did was looked down on in RTÉ because we had lots of, you know, intellectuals and historians and Gaelgors who all had a part to play in RTÉ. Indeed, were part of the fabric of the place. Mm. But they were more than slightly intolerant of popular music and the way it was presented to people. So Bill was extraordinary. He was a record producer, a music producer as well, who worked with a lot of acts down through the years. And he became an administrator because that's the only way you move forward in RTÉ for people. And, you know, good producers don't necessarily make good administrators, but he did.
Mm.
And he was head of 2FM eventually. and should have been years before that. But he was just an extraordinary guy, and he knew how to handle the talent, as it later became known as. Mm. And he was very, very good at it. You know, I worked with him when I did early morning radio, 1980 to 85. I found myself saying things on the air, some witty expression or something. And it would be only afterwards I realised that Bill had actually said that to me a week ago.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So he plants things in there.
Yeah.
And he was great.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Tamir, and you had this time as when I was growing up as well of
being you never grew up
presenter of the lottery.
Yeah.
And that was part of people's Wednesdays and Saturdays as well.
And part of mine.
Exactly.
As well.
And you earned good money for that, didn't you?
Yeah. Why wouldn't I? I gave up my weekends. I could never have a weekend away.
Yeah, but I remember in the business people used to say that's a really well-paid gig. But
At one stage, they were paying me more than RTE.
Go away. Just for that gig.
Well, just for that gig, you know. My Wednesday was gone and my Saturday was gone and my children's sanity was gone. One daughter in particular hated the fact that people approached me in the street.
Oh, yeah.
She just was uncomfortable with it right from an early age. Why can't people leave my dad alone?
Yeah.
You know? And the other daughter, the elder of the two, Jessica, used to think it was great. Great crack altogether.
And presumably the repetition of presumably the same old gag the whole time would get tiresome.
Yeah, I didn't mind it so much, really, because it was, particularly in Dublin, it's people's way of recognising you, accepting you and saying hello.
That's right.
That's basically all it is.
That's right,
you know? But what astounds me, Mario, is that I gave up doing the lotto draws in 2006.
Yeah.
And I've appeared on television half a dozen times since.
Mm.
And people still stop me in the street.
Yeah.
And I find that amazing. How do you recognise somebody from the radio?
Yeah.
And if I can just say to you, the nicest compliment I ever had, because I've been a radio man all my working life, I was in a shop one day and I was standing waiting to be served and there was a man beside me with a guide dog and a white stick. This sounds like a joke, but it's not. I got my turn at the counter and I just said, can I get a packet of Polo mints, please? And the guy beside me said, that's Ronan Collins.
Yeah.
And that was the greatest compliment I ever got in my life.
Yeah.
Because that was total recognition.
And his ears were super tuned.
Absolutely. And I love recalling that. It brings a smile.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really nice story.
Yeah.
But on the lottery thing, do you remember the prank you played with us? With Dempsey?
No.
Oh my God, I don't believe you don't remember this.
No.
Because it was brilliant. So again, for the listeners, do you remember this, Ed?
No.
So this was April Fool's Day about 2005, 2006 on the Dempsey Show. Fucking brilliant, right? And so we're there, right? April 1st, we had this planned. We were just going, I don't know if it's going to work or not. Ian, it's about 7:40 and Ian used to do the headlines. And it was the same time every morning, so he'd be doing the papers. And he was there like... wow, this story is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Last night's lotto draw. And I know people are going mad about this, but anyway, the page 15 here. Because Ronan Collins' numbers came up in the lotto draw and Ronan won the lotto. And we have Ronan on the line now. And it was himself. And he says, Ronan, how are you? Well, Ian, I'm just as shocked as you are, to be honest with you. But how did you feel? Right? He said, Well, Ian, what do you mean, how did I feel? I felt pretty, as I feel now, quite numb. I said, so the numbers were 36, 22, 49, la 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 la. And you got six of them, Ronan. So how much is it? It's 763,000, Ian. Jeepers, this is amazing. Ronan, I mean, you've been a friend of mine for a long time. Fair play to you, and I don't think anybody would begrudge you. Well, Ian, that's really nice of you to say, but I'm still shell-shocked, as I say, and hopefully I'll be able to go on doing the job. Well, anyway, good luck. Anyway, the fucking place went ballistic, the text messages, because it was just pre-social media. So basically, the place went, the fucking RTE. RTE, Jesus! RTE, we did sign our job! Oh, God. Yeah. I've never seen a reaction like it. It was brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
But sure, the
but
amount
totally I... totally deadpan pulled it off.
Yeah, well, the amount that I won on that particular occasion, it was only a month's money for doing the lot.
So, over the course of your career then, was there any job on radio or television that either you coveted or fancied a bash at or would have at least liked to have tried to see how it worked out?
No, not really. I may have had over the years, but I kind of don't do I don't do regrets. I wasn't considered for lots of things because I was the guy who did what I did.
Pigeonholed, yeah.
Yeah, and that was fine to be, even though I said to you, sometimes it seemed like I was the sore thumb that stuck out.
Yeah.
At the same time, I was the only one doing it daily radio, 7 to 7. I was the only music programme on Radio 1. And I coveted that and I protected it very much, very, very much, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were lots of times when word would come to me that such and such is thinking of moving you, taking you off that. Mm. And most of the time I had the confidence to be able to say, well, let's see how far they get with that.
Mm.
But there was always the niggling thing that they would take me off it for one reason or other, which brings me right up to date, because that's what happened to me after COVID, during COVID. And then shortly after it, I had been going into the radio building day in, day out, and doing my job and getting huge reaction to it, overwhelming reaction to being on. It became quite overwhelming some days. I mean, I'd gone from getting a couple of hundred emails during the course of the programme to getting a couple of thousand. And texts had gone out of control. It was whirring along, you know. It was just the line was moving.
I know what you mean.
And it became quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I was going into this building and there was virtually nobody else there. And I aligned that to the fact that I was going in during a pandemic and my friend wasn't there. Larry Gogan wasn't there. Because he was the heart of that building for so long. He really was. Not just for me, but for lots of other people. And then I knew I was going to be 70 last October. So I started to think again about what am I going to do with myself in the future? What do I want out of the future, out of the next 5 or 10 years if I'm given it? And the thing that kept cropping up all the time is I don't want somebody coming in and telling me you're finished. So I'm going to finish it.
Mm.
And that was the driving force. It was no longer about money. Certainly wasn't about an ego. My ego, if I ever had one, was massaged and satisfied a long time ago.
Mm.
It was just about what is the one thing I have left in my life that I could cherish, and that would be time to do other things with the people I love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I decided to stop the 5-day-a-week thing.
Mm.
And as you know, in this business, there's very few on-air people get the opportunity to go to management and say, this is what I've decided.
Mm, exactly, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Most, like politics, most careers end in failure, if you like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was great. It was a great feeling. And then, of course, you start wondering to yourself, yeah, I've given them 6 months' notice. When am I going to announce it? And they they kept on at me wanting to announce it every month. You know, August, September, October. And I said, no, I'm not doing a long goodbye.
No, okay.
And then I told them on Thursday, the 2nd of December, I said, by the way, I'm announcing it tomorrow.
And Ryan Tuberty is not doing a long goodbye.
No.
Either. Interesting. What do you think of his decision? Because I have my own opinions.
Yeah, well, I think he still has pretty naked ambition to do other things. I think he wants, he loves history. He loves the American political system. Well, he loves talking about it and is interested in it. He enjoys politics in Ireland. He comes from a very political family. I think he wants to be, I think he, less of a hero of his would be Terry Wogan, and more of a hero would be John Bowman, who, you know, is hugely knowledgeable. And John Bowman did a huge amount of things down through the years, you know. I remember John Bowman, when I was a kid, I remember John Bowman as a tennis commentator.
Go away.
Yeah, tennis commentator from the Irish Open in Fitzwilliam, because I played tennis as a kid. And I remember John Bowman then, and I remember him on lighter things, as they would have called it. And I think that in his heart, I don't know Ryan well. But I think he's 50 and I think he's very ambitious still to do other things. And that's very healthy.
Yeah. But do you mean ambitious to do history programmes?
Ambitious to do other things.
Yeah, like what?
Like history, current affairs.
Really?
Maybe radio documentaries. I think
current
so.
Affairs. Yeah. Because that would, I mean.
Because he's not a song and dance man. He's, you know, on his own admission. You know, he's not a song and dance.
He's a chatterbox, though.
Yeah, he's a chatterbox, yeah. And, you know, you ask Ed what you have to do with chatterboxes. You got to edit them down all the time, you know. He's a chatterbox, but I think he's a good listener, too. But that's kind of my impression. I'm sorry,
okay.
I'm a broadcaster. I don't do impressions.
I think, personally, he wants to be president of Ireland, Rona.
Well,
but, anyway.
Well, that's fine, too, if that's what you want. You know, that's grand. A lofty ambition.
And then he can tell poetry. He could go in and say, a cone, an ice cream cone.
That is a wonderful impression of Michael D. Higgins, I must say.
That was an impression of Mario Rosenstock doing an impression.
That was an impression of Mario Rosenstock.
Right. And, well, I think he wants to become President of Ireland.
Well, the best.
Because I remember him actually saying years ago, I remember him saying years ago to me, actually, we were out having a few pints and he went, you know, I don't think they're listeners, they're voters. What?
Yeah.
Voters. Strange. I thought they're listeners.
I don't know him usually, but he's very affable and friendly.
He is, yeah.
He does the old Gay Byrne thing, though. He doesn't stop when he meets you.
Yeah.
He doesn't stop. He keeps walking.
Gotta keep going, Sonny.
Yeah, yeah. Hello there, son. Good boy. Good boy.
Do
aren't
you know what,
great?
Though? I think he's right about that. Because when you are presenter of the Late Late Show, you are de facto the most famous person in Ireland. And if you stopped for everybody, you wouldn't get anywhere. So I think you do have to keep moving. So I do understand that. I do understand that.
Kids will ask him for his autograph.
Yeah.
But kids will ask me for an autograph for their mother.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, tell us about this. Didn't you have a little spat with Louis Walsh? Did you make it up with Louis
that's
Walsh?
That's years ago.
Yeah. But it was good, though.
Yeah. Did we make it up? I don't think my wife has ever let me make up. She never forgave him for that. Because
really?
We knew.
Explain to our listeners the context.
Well, we knew Louis well. I've known Louis for years, since he worked in Tommy Hayden's office. Tommy was a manager, show band impresario, and Louis worked in the office and he managed Chips and looked after Johnny Logan and other acts and ran gigs around the country. So I'd known Louis for years and. Six were formed, the group Six.
Yeah.
And they brought out a record, a song called There's a Whole Lot of Loving Going On, which turned out to be one of the biggest selling Irish singles of all time.
It did.
And I said it'll never do anybody any good except Louis Walsh. And I said Six won't last. And I said I felt it was a terrible launching pad for a group of hopefuls who were now taken into a group and told that they were a super group and they would be appearing in front of 25,000 people on a Westlife concert. And I said, that's not normal. If you form a group together, put them in the Bag It Inn or put them in a pub and let them enjoy nobody coming to the gig and see if they enjoy it then.
Yeah.
And it was a very old-fashioned kind of a thing. And, of course, Louis hears what Louis wants to hear, you know. That's stupid. Why don't you go back to playing your show band records and saving children in Africa? And that was the killing thing. That I'd done a couple of trips to Africa.
Ethiopia.
Yeah, Ethiopia and Malawi. I was in loads of places.
And I understand you were pretty affected by that trip to Ethiopia.
You couldn't not be.
Yeah.
You couldn't not be. So
about Leonardo DiCaprio t-shirts or something, was there?
Yeah, they had Nike t-shirts and Leonardo DiCaprio t-shirts, and they didn't know Leonardo DiCaprio was, and they didn't know what Nike was.
Mm.
But those things got into the interior, as they might say, of a place like Ethiopia. And it made me realise that the Americanization of the world was huge. And it was then I came out with an expression. I said, the Americans think they know everything about democracy. Like they'd want to come into Ethiopia and build an 8-lane highway, 100 miles long, with a Pizza Hut at one end and a McDonald's at the other, and say, this is democracy. Mm. To a people who have been led by their entire lives and for generations have been led by individuals. Now, whether they're despots or whether they're dictators or whatever they are, that's the system in Africa, the tribal system. And it's very difficult for us in the Western world to comprehend. The main thing is that people in Africa, when they have nothing, if you tell them to stand up and walk for 2 days, there is food over there. They will stand up and they will walk for 2 days. Just to get food, to get water. A simple thing like that. And it was absolutely scary to see. And I when I went there, I mean, I'm a big bloke, but I was a bigger bloke then. You know, I was nearly 20 stone weight.
Oh.
So you had people who were involved in a famine and a guy who caused the famine,
mm-hmm.
you know. And mm. it makes you feel, humility is a dangerous thing sometimes, but you do feel very humble. And so when Louis said, I'll go and save the children in Africa, I remember I just said, oh, well, okay, that's it, Joe. I have nothing else to say. You know, if that's what he dragged it down to. Now, he apologised afterwards and he says, you know what I'm like. I fly off the handle and everything. But I would never have been a supporter of Louis after that and the X Factor and all those things. I was lucky enough to have been a musician and to have played to no people and played to lots of people.
Yeah. And I actually loved your the series you narrated about the show bands. I thought that was a brilliantly produced series on T.G. Carr, and learned so much about the kind of evolution of Irish music just through the eras of the show bands. Mm. It's fascinating stuff. Did you enjoy doing that yourself?
Yeah, I did enjoy doing it because I was talking about people I knew.
I know.
I knew so many of them down through the years, and that was a labour of love. I mean, when I was in 1970, I was 18 years old. The show band thing was finished.
Yeah.
And I had had a huge interest in it right through the 1960s as a kid. Going to Peter's Hall in Phibsborough, where my dad was on the door. They were running it for the Vincentian Foreign Missions. And I just wanted to see the band and talk to the musicians. And I remember meeting a band called The Vampires, a four-piece band. And their front man was a fellow called Tony Kenny, who has been my lifelong friend.
The Tony Kenny, Jesus Christ Superstar and all that.
Has been my lifelong friend. Yeah. And Tony celebrates a big birthday now in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
He's not pleased at
all. Is it Roundy?
Very roundy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, it's a fat lady and a roundy.
Okay.
You know, so he's going to be 80.
Yeah.
And Tony became my friend when I was 16 years old. And I thought he was 19 or 20. He wasn't. He's 10 years older than me. And he was the kind of guy I loved. He was in a band. He worked hard. He loved the music and everything. And that's where I got so much of what I love about music from people. And it was important to me that I liked the people, and I liked so many of them. Mm. And that's why I hated when people dissed the show bands, because no more than myself, they weren't there in its heyday, but they knew nothing about it. And I include Bob Geldof and Bono, and I've said it to them both. You know, I said, don't knock something you know nothing about. And neither of them reacted to what I said, you know. But these were people, these were musicians. The show band thing was an Irish thing of Ireland, of Irish people. And it was a phenomenal time, a phenomenal social movement that brought Ireland dragging from the beginning of the 19th century to the end of the 19th century, but it happened in the 20th century. You know? It was part of Ireland opening up.
No, it was a beautiful, beautiful series. Do you know, I mean, did you know guys in the Miami show band? Because this is something that, this shows you how much Ireland has changed in the last 25 years. I mean, we've now moved into a generation who don't understand don't recall violence anymore. Mm. And you knew a bunch of guys who were in the most successful, pretty much, show band of the time. Mm. And, I mean, this horrific attack happened, this Miami show band. Mm. Wasn't Dickie Rock involved?
No.
No, it was...
Dickie had been in the Miami from 1962 until about 1968, when there was a Mark II Miami show band, if you like.
Yeah.
And that Mark II band included Fran O'Toole and Brian McCoy.
Yeah.
And later, then Dickie left that band, but the Miami continued on, and Tony Garrity was in it. Tony came from a well-known family of musicians, either Crumlin or Ballyfermot. His brother is the famous Carl Garrity, the sax player, who's played with Mary Black on all those beautiful records through the years. And, you know, I knew Tony, I'd met Fran, and I'd met Brian McCoy, who, the irony of it was, as they used to say then, was a Protestant from the north.
Yes.
Fran was from Bray in County Wicklow.
But just explain, because you literally have, what happened on this thing, in this?
The Miami?
Yes. What happened?
They were coming home from a gig.
From the north?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were stopped, still on the northern side of the border.
Yeah.
And they were stopped by guys who produced guns. And while they were being held up at the hedgerow at the side of the road, another guy or two opened up the back of their Volkswagen van and put in what looked like a box of some kind.
Yeah.
Which turned out to be a bomb, which exploded prematurely. And the guys who were holding the Miami guys at the hedgerow started to shoot. And they shot Fran dead and Brian and Tony, who'd already been affected by the explosion. And Des Lee fell into the ditch and managed to get himself up and scarper across the field and survive. And Stephen Travers, the bass player, was left on the ground. His body was absolutely mangled. How he lived, nobody will ever know. And that was a band. Fellas coming from home from the north, going home to their wives and family. And because they were from the Free State, and you can bring this bomb down to Dundalk and it'll explode there. But that didn't happen. So it was a tragedy, an absolute tragedy. It was more of a tragedy that they were musicians, troubadours, fellas who went up, who united people, who played in dance halls, no matter whether they were Protestant, Catholic, Unionist, Republican. It didn't matter. It didn't matter to anybody.
And Ronan, would they have been playing in halls where there would have been mixtures of people?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So bringing people together, literally?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You weren't asked your religion when you went in the door of a dance hall. You know? And it didn't make any difference what religion you were. And it had a terrible effect on everybody. It killed live music up around the border area and the north of Ireland. Just killed it completely. The bands wouldn't travel. And a lot of bands did very well in the north and mightn't have been making a huge living in the south. Careers were gone. But more than that, it was... You don't go there. Anywhere in the world, the musician is sacrosanct. You know, they're not political. They probably are much more political now. They say things much more. But certainly working musicians must always be treated with the respect that working musicians deserve. And that's not politics. And it's not war. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it's one of those terrible blights on the country. And... I was proud to have known the lads. I was younger than they were, but it just had a huge effect on people, and it's still remembered. And I remembered it every day since on radio, since 1979, my very first July 31st on radio in 1979. And I mentioned the Miami Showband Massacre that had happened only 4 years before that. Mm. Only four yeah. years. And I mentioned it on or as close to the anniversary every year right up to last year.
Yeah, I would hear you, yeah. yeah. I would hear you, yeah. You're one of the only reasons I would even have known about it because mm. you kept saying it every year and then I'd go, yeah, yeah, what this?
And it was the only time I ever... I didn't couch my language. I said they were murdered. I never changed. I didn't say they were killed or they were in a tragic incident. I said they were murdered because they were. Just murdered. Senseless. Senseless. And the people on the other side, I mean, Miami weren't on any side. Mm. But the perpetrators of the crime, they were killed as well. A couple of them got away and a couple of them were killed.
Mm.
So what was the point of it all? You know, nobody won that.
No,
nobody.
Yeah, you know? it's shocking even to recall that something like that could have happened, and even yeah. more shocking in the context of nowadays.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most serious thing that I've ever broached on the air, and I would be very strong in. I believe that that should be remembered, and it should always be highlighted every year, at least once a year. It should be highlighted.
Yeah.
For the folly
yeah.
of so much that went on.
Yeah, and also, I suppose, to illustrate that when things get out of control, these kind of things end up happening, where musicians who bring people together end up blown up and slaughtered.
Yeah.
So let's not go there, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or let's try and do whatever we can to obviate that ever happening.
You know, musicians are supposed to die in plane crashes and car crashes and that kind of thing. You know?
More exotic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Great career move.
Good career move, yeah. That's good. So listen, can you do this thing? I used to love it when you handed over to Joe Duffy.
All right, yeah.
So
yeah.
Can you hand over to Joe Duffy now as if you were on the radio?
Yeah, I used to try and figure out different ways of doing it, but you had to understand as well.
Well, he's ready for you now if you hand over to him.
Yep.
Please don't keep him too long now, Ron.
No, but I have to explain to you that you never knew which mood was coming in.
Oh, really?
You know? Ah, yeah, because Joe's as human as anybody else and particularly probably more human on the air than lots of people because he's dealing with the raw edges of things a lot of the time, you know? And but more often than not, Joe would come in with the Evening Herald and he'd read the front of that. We're getting a lot of calls in about the fact that there's young fellas riding bicycles over humps in Fairview Park.
Are you ready to hand over to him?
Okay.
Let's do it, so.
20 minutes to 1 o'clock now and time to hand over to Joe and see what's happening on today's Live Line. Joe.
Well, good afternoon to you, Ronan. Absolutely delighted to be talking to you on this day. Of course, the day of days, April, when Ronan Keaton, of course, a good great singer, of course, Ronan Keaton, but Ronan Collins, of course, the presenter, is back just for 5 minutes, just presenting the Ronan Collins lunch hour with his lunch down Loosener Upper, just finished there. Ronan, good afternoon to you. Are you keeping well yourself?
I'm very well, thank you, Joe.
Good. You are actually the subject of today's Live Line because we've got Louis Walsh on the line. Good afternoon to you, Louis.
Joe, how are you?
Louis, what do you want to say to Ronan?
Ronan, I think we need to bury the hatchet. It happened nearly 20 years ago. You've been back to Ethiopia 50 times. Ronan, let's put it to bed. What do you say?
Do you want the hatchet out of my back? Which one do you want?
What do you say, Ronan? Will we put it to bed?
So hold the line, Louis, because Miriam O'Callaghan's on the line. Miriam wants to say hello. Miriam wants to say hello.
Joe, Ronan, hi.
Hi, Miriam.
You know, I'm really emotional listening to all this stuff, genuinely. You know, you've really affected me. You know, especially that stuff you said about Ryan Tuberty and how he's going to go for the presidency. I can't believe you said that, Ronan. I mean, I thought you and I had talked it over. Hadn't we?
No.
But are you not going to be my campaign advisor?
Absolutely not.
You and Jim?
You're too tall.
This is not going very well. Good afternoon to you. Matt Cooper's on the line. Matt Cooper. Say hello to Ronan. Say hello to Matt Cooper.
Hello, Matt. We've only ever met once before.
Hi. I
never met Matt Cooper once.
And how dare you call me a fucking DJ? I heard you. You called me a DJ. You're a little bollocks.
Hold on. Good afternoon to you. Is there anybody else you want to talk to, Ronan? There's loads of them waiting on the line. You're a big celebrity.
Gay Byrne.
Well done, Sonny. How are you? Gabo here in heaven. What do you want to hear?
I remember he gave me a bit of advice once. An incident had happened and I was on the front page of the papers. And out of the blue, he walked in the door of Studio 6 and he came up and he said, "How are you, son?" And I said, "I'm fine. Thanks very much." And he said, "Don't worry, this too will pass."
I remember it well. I remember it well. I remember it, Sonny. You opened the door, there you were with the big black tash, and I said, "That too will pass." And there it is, the tash is gone. No more tash. Black tasharoony out the window. You gave yours to Marty Whelan. You gave it to Marty. You handed it over to Marty. He took your tash off you. Well done, Sonny. Well, well done to you. And we will leave it there for now. Run on.
Good, Mario, and I'll just leave you with one thought, that here we are in April 2023. Isn't it extraordinary how many people dyed their hair grey during the pandemic?
Exactly. And now they're back to normal. Now they're back to normal. Fantastic. Ronan Collins, thank you very much for coming in to Marconi House and doing this podcast with me. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mario. Thank you.
Thanks a million, Ronan. And my thanks to Ronan Collins for being my special guest on the Mario Rosenstock podcast this week. A happy Easter to you all. I hope you have a restful and lovely time. It looks like the weather has taken a turn for the better this Easter. If you want to contact me, it's mariorosenstock@gmail.com. I read them all and get back to most of them. I'm on Twitter and Facebook as well. And see you same time, same place, back here next week. Bye-bye.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.